Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Excellent.
You can say you're COVID fine, which I feel like is like I'm not actively dying or having COVID, but I am not great because we are living in this time. But
1,000%.
I'm otherwise fine. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I also think like, aren't we actively dying? Like, isn't life?
Yeah,
just
I guess
to
I mean
die?
That. Yes, being alive, we are actively dying. All right, fine. You're COVID fine, Michael. That's the point.
And that's all. It's truly all I could ask for right now. What's new with you?
So I've been saving this. I've been keeping a secret from you just so I could use it as our little intro story today.
And also, like, Jill's very organized and has, like, a document going for us every time we have a new episode. And I think this is blank. Like, it's a true secret.
It's a true secret. So, not that people do, but if you just happen to follow my personal Instagram, not the podcast,
Jumble of Jill,
you will know that we fostered a cat in early December. And you foster a cat for a lot of different reasons. This one was coming to us because she was quote unquote shy. Okay. And it was just this thing of like, you know, make sure she's comfortable being around people and, you know, she can fit in with a family and not like she's cowering because she's like never encountered humans. Like, yeah, got it. We'll get her used to being around people. I brought her into my office and I think it might have been the last day we recorded, but I opened her box, her carrier, and this cat came out and was like my best friend. Oh. It was like, hey, hi. Thanks for bringing me home. I feel great. Oh. And she just like walked around. She loved everybody. She loved our kids. She loved Mark. She loved me. And she walked around this house. Like normally it takes a couple days. You keep them in my office because it has glass doors and they can see and they can hear us.
Right.
And they get kind of used to us. And then we let them out little by little. No, like that evening, that cat was like, hi, I see you guys sitting on the couch. Why am I in here? Like she was one of us.
Oh.
So we, quote unquote, foster failed.
Yeah, your first one.
Yeah, first one in 2 years, we adopted this cat. And the kids named her Katniss Everkitten.
Yeah.
After Katniss Everdeen.
No, I wouldn't have known that.
No.
Yeah.
So she's here. She's like part of the crew. She fits in great. And we were just laughing. I was like, it's like we were meant to find each other.
Yeah.
So we go on vacation. We come back. We were home a couple weeks. Mark said, should we go back on the foster list? I said, yeah, let's see how Katniss does.
Okay, I was going to ask you this.
It like, may not be a good fit, but
right.
Let's try it. We picked up a new cat that came with the name Mr. Bennett, which I thought was adorable and hilarious. But since I'm
so like – appropriate.
Right. But it means nothing to my children. So he's being called Baby Panther. He's all black and has like green eyes. He does look like a panther. This cat, like, again, came in here like, hey, so this is my house.
You are kidding me.
I'm not. We've never had this happen. And then it happens twice in a row. And I mean, this cat wants to be Katniss's friend so bad. And the first week, Katniss was like, I can't see you. I mean, like, they would both be laying on the couch next to each other. And her face would be like turned away, like, is there another cat? No, I don't see anyone here. It was wild, but now they've decided that they're friends. So we now have to keep Baby Panther. So I'm a cat lady now?
Yes. I mean, like, definition.
How many cats is too many?
I guess once you're no longer allowed to sign up on the foster list is when you know you've done it too many times.
That's it. Mark said no more fostering.
Yeah. Did he really?
Yes.
You've kept this a secret from ever, unless you've been hiding me from your stories. Like, I had no idea you had another cat.
This cat has, I think, only been on social media one time.
Okay.
And it was the day that they decided to lay together and ignore one another.
Okay.
Which was kind of when I was like, I might need this cat.
Right. Maybe that's what I thought. You guys just fostered another one.
Yeah. So I've not been putting Baby Panther on social media yet. But my favorite, I will limit myself to one cat story. But my favorite thing that they do together is they'll like play fight and wrestle. And Panther is a kitten. He's maybe 6 to 9 months old.
Wow.
And Katniss Everkitten is between 1 and 2 years old. So she's young, but she's not in that kitten stage.
Yeah.
And when she has had enough, she's not a big cat, but she has long hair. So she's a giant floof ball. Uh-huh. When she has had enough of this kitten, she will just sit on him and just smother him with her floof.
Sure.
Uh-huh. It's just like, I told you I was done.
That's what they say to do when you're training puppies. Like when Taryn was a puppy, to like show that you are alpha, you would have just put like a little bit of weight on him. Like if he's just like really riled up, just like hold him down a little bit more firmly. And the same like concept with like a thunder coat. I love hearing that it's just, it was like a natural thing. Jeez. She was like, I'm going to add weight to this cat so it stops.
I told you to stop touching me.
Yeah. Are they friends or are they? Or is it going to be like, so enemies to friends, enemies to lovers?
I think this is like, I'm not into knowing new people. Like, I'm sure. On a man cleanse to like, now I can't imagine life without you. I think it's.
Look at it.
There he is.
Oh, it's a good thing, too, because like, black cats don't get adopted as often. And
I've heard that.
Yeah. I think it's just because of like stupid, like bad luck stuff.
Yeah.
And my parents adopted a black cat when I was out of the house. And we love that cat. Anyway, yes, it is a perfect segue into our conversation today.
Yeah. So today's all about romance. And I wanted to loop our listeners in on like a happy coincidence. On our original planning calendar, we had scheduled this episode. Well, in the way back, we had scheduled it to happen in season 2. And then it got punted to season 3. And at first, we put it in a February episode. And we were like, oh, this will be perfect. And then, like, life happened. And we didn't get it recorded. Honestly, I'm so happy that we had to move it. Because, like, romance books are fun all the time.
100%.
And I'm just glad that we aren't shoving them into that box and pretending like they don't exist the rest of the year.
That's such a good point. And, like, by the time this comes out, February will have happened. Valentine's Day has come and gone. You have been inundated with love everywhere. And now it's probably like, okay, you're on your own. See ya. And like keep reading them. And it's sort of the same thing with like Pride Month. Like,
yes.
You just get like every single corporation shows their pride and changes everything to rainbow. Like, thanks, Nike, for your rainbow logo for 30 days.
Yeah.
You should read queer stuff year-round and because they exist year-round. So totally. I didn't even think about that as like a good thing for us to have this come out later.
No, it just occurred to me when I was making our notes this morning.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, did you read romance? Was it on your radar? What was your relationship with it before this episode?
I honestly never really read romance before, and not intentionally. It just wasn't on my radar, which is a wild bananas thing to say because romance novels are everywhere. I hear how wrong I am, but it was just that they weren't the books I gravitated towards, so they weren't ever like front of mind, what I was looking for. And then I think in us doing this podcast and then working more in like specifically book publishing, I'm seeing it so much more often now than I ever have before. And I think romance is really like having a moment. So I didn't really engage with it before. I mean, I don't know. I guess not like in terms of a straight up romance novel. Like, I think you could consider like the Twilight series romance novels
for
YA. And yeah, I read those, but like that has a supernatural spin. Like it doesn't try to sell you on the romance until you're reading it. You're like, oh, these are romance novels. So yeah, I think accidentally. What about you?
Yeah, I have always liked, we're all familiar with my obsession with Hallmark movies.
Absolutely.
And I do occasionally like to throw in the Hallmark movie book version, but I wouldn't say that I'm a person who like seeks out romance. So this was kind of fun from that aspect of like, I want to read a romance. Let me go find one.
Right. That's a good distinction. That's an important distinction, I think, because I love rom-coms, movies. Yeah. I love watching them. And I think I anticipated that experience being similar, and it's, for me, it wasn't. This was, I will admit, like a very challenging for me. And I was surprised by how challenging this was. I think because I just was like, I love You've Got Mail is one of my favorite movies of all time. I love Sleepless in Seattle. I love Pride and Prejudice. Like that was fun. Those are fun to watch. So this will be the exact same experience reading a romance novel, and it's completely different experiences.
Totally different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know a good way to ask this question. Like, can guys get into romance? Like, it seems like it's kind of a lady space.
Sure. Yeah. My immediate answer is like, duh, yes.
Right.
You know, like, who cares? Like, read a romance because, I don't know how to say this, but like, one of the romance novels I read was like very, lots of sex and lots of like straight sex. And, I think like heterosexual men, I'm sure can find something they like in romance novels. But I do wonder why it is very female driven. Is it because, well, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I feel like there's a lot of things kind of wrapped up in it, but it tends to be stories about women written by women.
Sure.
And so I think it tends to be a woman's space primarily because of that fact. And then as a result, I think it gets a reputation for being lightweight or not being like real reading.
Or like a subgenre of women's lit.
Yeah, like I think romance is written to be enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Like, you know it's going to have a nice ending. You're going to, you know, you're going to end up in a happy place.
Sure.
For me, I think it's about enjoying the ride and seeing how the author separates and unites the characters, what obstacles they're overcoming. And I think it's one of the few genres where friendships are also really central to the story. So I think they can be like smart and savvy. They're increasingly inclusive. But for me, it's like it's a guaranteed good time. And I think because it is created to be enjoyed versus created to explore suffering or I don't want to discount the war. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's just – and so I think it's really – I think because it is a space where it's created for women by women and it is meant entirely for pleasure that it just gets this label.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think that boils down to like a larger conversation about like what are men supposed to be allowed to want? And I'm not sitting here like I'm not a meninist, but like I have a friend who I've had for almost my whole life. And he is straight and for as long as he can remember has wanted to be a dad, like loves kids.
Yeah.
And when he would say that as he was like getting into like young adulthood, like people would laugh at him and tease him. Like his friends would like, quote unquote, lovingly tease him for that. And I remember him asking me like, why is that weird? Like, why am I like being ridiculed for this? And I was like, I don't know. Like, it was the first time that I had ever, like, seen that happening.
Yeah.
And I think it is the same sort of thing here where, like, there are just these gender rules that are set up where, like, if a man wants it, it's, like, creepy or, like, softening them. Whereas, like, if a woman wants it, that's just normal, natural. And that's also, like, an incredibly binary conversation where, like, where people fall in the middle.
Yeah.
Then what are they supposed to... What are they supposed to be experiencing that is quote-unquote correct? And I think, like, one of the books I brought today is a co-written book, and one of them is male and the other one's female. And that was kind of intentional because I want there to be more space for literally all people to just read whatever the fuck they want. Like, forget about romance. Like, whatever it is that's holding you back from reading whatever you want to read, just, like, just creating space for people to be the kind of reader they want to be.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about who wrote the books that I chose. Oh, man. This probably says, calling myself out.
So tell me.
Normally, when we go to record these episodes, I am very intentional and being like, okay, what are the books that I picked? This is a female author. This is an LGBTQ author. You know, like making sure, yeah. Do I have a book by an author of color? I did not do that for this episode. I think I have two women and a non-binary person.
Oh, well, but also I will say, like, you've also read, like, a book that we've talked at length about in season two was Red, White, and Royal Blue, written by
That's
a
queer... That's one of the ones.
That you brought today?
That's one of the ones yeah.
Oh, okay, good. I hear you. And I actually, like, you're always so quick to call yourself out, which I think is, like, important for all of us to do. But I also think that, like, it suggests, like, what is still pervasive in publishing, which is that there is still a lot more space for white authors to succeed mm-hmm. than it is for authors of color or non-binary authors, because one of mine is like, well, I don't want to say too much, but
yeah.
I hear you. And I think that, like, it's a complicated conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more prevalent this genre becomes, the more it will explode in a good way. Like, I think yeah. that there is clear interest, like deep interest in this genre, especially because I think it's, I love what you say about it being inclusive, because I also think that there's this misconception that it's like an anti-feminist like genre because it's romance and we're supposed to be independent. And what I have found is that it's incredibly progressive.
So that's that perfect segue. Oh. That's actually like the next question I had on my notes doc is like, does romance stereotype women? Because I think that's what, yeah, like.
I think it's one of those things where, why can't a woman be independent or a business owner or whatever and also love shopping or love romance or whatever it is that, like, would stereotype them? Mm-hmm. Like, I think if anything, it just shows that, like, women are multifaceted and are multitudes.
Yeah.
It can. I mean, I don't want to give, like, there are certainly books out there that are doing, like, not the good work. But I think, like, there is and the people I follow on social media, and I know you follow them too, like, are not recommending romance books that are putting women in a bad light because they're women.
Yes. I agree. It's one of those things where I feel like it's yes and no. I mean, certainly. Yeah,
absolutely.
There are books that do that. But there are also this feature of a lot of these books where the women are on genuine journeys of self-discovery,
right.
of starting over, of facing challenges. I don't know. I just think it's really interesting. And
yeah, absolutely.
Women's stories and voices, both as authors and characters, have just been so systematically devalued in literature.
Mm-hmm.
And we read things like The Catcher in the Rye and The Great Gatsby right. and The Lord of the Flies and Romeo and Juliet. And it's like, boys, 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 dead girl, boys. You know, and it's like, we spend so much time reading kind of men's musings.
Yeah, or men's versions of women.
And those things are hailed as like revolutionary. But this experience is just kind of undervalued or devalued. And I think you're right. There's so many subgenres in romance and so many stories to be told.
Yeah, because I also think, to your point, like, it is also like romance novels and romance novelists are fighting an uphill battle in validating themselves because of its perception. Because we look at a story like, if we were looking at a book that is categorized as literary fiction about a mom or about like a romantic situation, like, it isn't anti-feminist, it's literary. Yeah. Whereas like, because it's romance, it has its own set of expectations that other people who haven't read romance are putting upon it. So it just feels like one of those things where it's like, you can't win them all. Like, yeah, it's, you're not, like, people who aren't going to be interested in romance aren't going to look into it at all. And so, like, just write the book that you know your readers are going to want to read anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Can I read you what I think might be, if not the best, definitely the funniest quote about romance novels?
Sure, of course. Please. What if I said no? Like, don't read it.
Yeah, no. I read this Vulture article by Jamie Green, and here's the quote. Books don't need to be sad or challenging to be worthwhile. Sometimes you need to replenish your stores of good feelings to remind yourself that stories can end happily, that people can fall in love, and that a guy can want to get you off 3 times before he takes off his own pants.
Yeah. Okay, so like, which is like... absolutely something that happened in the book I read.
Yes. I don't want to say too much, but I want us to discuss this aspect when we get there.
Oh, we're going to have to, because like, I was unprepared. Like, we talked a lot about like...
Oh, same.
Romance stuff. Like, not everyone's cup of tea. Like, only write like what I just said. But like, I walked into this completely blind. I was like... halfway through one of the books I brought today, and I was then talking to my friends Lily and Margie about it, and I was like, I am not a prude. In fact, my friends would probably call me a freak, okay? And there were things in here that I was like, I am shocked and stunned, and they were like, well, what? So I like said it, and they were like, yep, there's lots of that. They couldn't have been less shocked.
Yes. yeah, let's, when we get there.
Yeah. Cause like I said, like, I don't know. I'm curious about this conversation. I am curious about our feelings about what we read. It really challenged me. I didn't altogether enjoy my experience. I want to love this genre because it's not going anywhere. And people that I love these books.
Yes.
Or not these books, but like romance books. And I am just curious about, like, we've done episodes about this, like my expectations versus the reality. Like, yes. What were my expectations wrong, or am I valid in my experience?
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's jump in.
Okay.
Did you also read Red, White, and Royal Blue, or just me?
I haven't yet, which is so funny because like we've been building up to a romance novels episode for like 2 years now, and yeah. I said like, I definitely want to read Red, White, and Royal Blue. Could you get it for me? And you got it for me. Then you read it, and mm-hmm. I have yet to read it.
Okay, I won't do spoilers. So that, because that was the first book,
yeah,
that I read for this episode. Because like, how could I not read this? I felt like I love hearing that you haven't read it yet, because I was feeling like the last person on Earth,
yeah,
who had not read it. Here's a quick synopsis. The president's son, Alex, causes a little bit of an international incident when he confronts his longtime nemesis, England's Prince Henry, at a royal wedding. So to smooth over public feelings, they are ordered by their respective families to set up this fake friendship and then have it documented in the tabloids to just kind of restore everyone's goodwill. But of course, you know, it's that hate to love situation, and, you know, surprise, the enemies fall in love. So then it dives into things like, will coming out impact his mother's reelection? Do they want to be together enough to withstand the intrusion that a public coming out would involve? All of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I liked that this book took a fairly straightforward romance trope and mm-hmm. gave it a twist. It was the first same-sex romance that I had read. So, like, why wouldn't it work? I don't know. I loved that it had funny dialogue. I really loved the relationship between Alex and his sister. It had a very, like, Gossip Girl vibe okay. with, like, text messages and social media. It also felt a little... This sounds so ridiculous. It felt a little bit closer to real life because who doesn't fall in love with their nemesis, exactly. the prince?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it did touch on issues of racism, and Alex talked specifically about being gay and Hispanic,
mm-hmm.
And gender and personal and civic responsibility. And it's not a book that you're going to read to understand any of these issues, but it acknowledges them as part of, like, the fabric of life.
Sure.
And things that would be going on also while you were falling in love with your nemesis, the prince.
Yeah.
So that just felt more real to me. I don't know. Yeah. I liked it.
Well, because it didn't ignore it.
Yes, it didn't ignore it. It didn't just, you know, act like... I don't know what it would act like. I liked it. It was fun. I don't know. Two thumbs up.
Yeah. One of my coworkers recently said this is one of her favorite books of all time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I've heard only excellent things about it.
Yeah, me too. I would not say that this one is spicy, but there are some intimate moments.
Uh-huh.
And since this is not... Hold, please. Hey, Penny. Can you take your stuff upstairs?
I think we have to leave that in. Sex chat's coming up. Take the kid out of here.
Right. Because I have not experienced sex in this way.
Uh-huh.
I was just sort of like, is this how it works?
Asking the questions at full adulthood.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, huh. So then me being me, I text my friend Kevin and I was like, he does not listen. So I feel like I'm going to have to tell him I told this story on the podcast, but he doesn't listen. So, you know, he'll never hear it. I texted him. I was like, hey, so stupid question. I'm reading this book for the podcast. I really liked it. It has, you know, gay men sex in it. Like, how do I learn about how this works? Oh my God.
You are bright red.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, love my friends. He sent me a number of reputable websites because sure. I didn't want to type this into like Google because, I mean, who knows what I would get back.
Pretty good idea what you might have gotten back.
I know, right? He sent me a number of really lovely websites and I have a much better understanding now of so many things. So, yeah.
It's funny you say that because one of the books I picked – well, we'll talk about it when we get to it, but very similar experience. I like hearing you tell me that you wouldn't consider this spicy because I guess I'm maybe a little bit of a prude because I just didn't anticipate any of this being spicy. And it's so spicy. Like romance as a genre is like spice level 1 to 10. It's an 11 when it goes there.
Yes. So this one I would not consider spicy.
Right. No, but that's my point. You, like differentiating it.
Some details. I love it. This is like the funniest episode. There were some details, which is what.
Can you say?
No. Yeah.
Cover your eyes. Don't look at me.
Okay. So it was like, you know, like they're together for the first time and it's like, you know.
You don't have to. I don't want you to feel bullied into this.
Oh, no, I don't. It's fine.
Okay.
You know, it's like, I got to find like lube and condoms and, right. you know, and I was like, why? Because I'm stupid.
No.
And
why would you know?
I just didn't. it's not that like I didn't know that existed. I just didn't really know the specifics of it.
Absolutely, yes.
And so, you know, there wasn't like a graphic description of sex itself. It was more like just like some of the details. And I was just like, I feel like I need to understand this topic in general. No,
I totally agree, because like now whenever you watch a movie that has like a gay relationship, if they're having like spontaneous sex somewhere, like that is a very difficult, I'll say nearly impossible task for gay men to do, because there's a lot of prep that needs to happen.
Right. And yes, and now I know so much more, and what the safe version of that looks. I know so much.
Yes. Man, the health system has really just like absolutely failed all of us.
Seriously.
Yeah. Health education doesn't exist in America. Middle school health
was definitely like, here's one kind of body parts. Here's another kind of body part. If you're in middle school, don't put them together.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's my first book. I really liked it, and good. I am a more knowledgeable person.
That's all you could ask for.
How about you?
Okay, so my first one is also, was I would also not consider this spicy in the least. And I think that is why I, part of why I was so shocked when things got spicy elsewhere. Because I was like, look, I read a romance novel. And then, you know what I mean? And then I was like, no, you didn't. You just wait.
Yes.
But it's called What If It's Us? And it's written by Becky Albertalli. I've never been sure if I'm saying that right.
I don't know. Becky
Albertalli and Adam Silvera. It's co-authored. It's about, it's I would say it's YA romance, which is also why it's not very spicy. I think it like, it's not like it doesn't go to like sex places because like teenagers are having sex, but it's not exploitative, thank God, because I would have been like unbearably uncomfortable if it went into like deep detail about these teens going at it. It's about Arthur and Ben. And Arthur is in New York City for the summer. He's interning at his mom's law office, and he is a very romantic boy and loves Broadway and sort of believes like that the universe is gonna like award him a great love. And Ben is a New Yorker and is kind of on the opposite side, where he thinks the universe should just butt out of his life. He is in the middle of a breakup and is at the post office preparing to send his ex-boyfriend's things to him. And Arthur is there on like a, doing a run for his job, and they have their meet cute there.
Mm.
And then what entails from there is like a summer romance that's kind of like not quite happening. There's a lot of false starts and date do-overs and all with the knowledge of like, this is like, you're not going to be here in the end of the summer. Why are we doing this at all? So I thought this was cute. I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there's a sequel out now that I'm not like in any hurry to read. Wow, this is like a rave so far.
Yeah.
But it's cute. And I think that a lot of what I liked about it was more that I was just emotional that it existed at all, because young people are going to be reading this and are reading it. I mean, I think it's a bestseller. And there was nothing even remotely close to this when I was growing up, and like just normalizing having same sex attraction at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And something else I really liked about it was that the parents, them being not straight was just normal. Like they talked about their crushes and like wanting to go on dates. And that was also lovely to see, like not expecting and assuming your children are straight was lovely. I guess it just was a little disjointed for me, because, and I'm learning that, I guess I just don't think I love co-authored books, because what happens naturally is that like I'm gonna like one style better than the other. So then when I got to the other, I was just like, can we just move on? Like,
yeah,
can I get to the other person's? And but something else that I did like about it being co-authored was that because each of the main characters was written by a different author, it really felt like individual characters. Because sometimes when you read a book, authors have certain writing voices. And so mm-hmm. like a lot of the characters follow that same writing voice. So these felt like two totally different people, which is, I think, really hard to do. And so because it was co-authored, it was able to do that. I think it's a good way into romance. I think because, again, it's YA. So there is sex in it, but it's not, it's done really like daintily and with respect to like young people. But it's one of those things where it's like, now that I've read another one, I don't even know if this is considered romance. But I think it's considered romance. I mean, it's about their failed attempts to get together. And something mm-hmm. that was interesting about it was by the end, I don't want to give anything away, but what should I say? It's been out for years. It's been out for like 4 years.
Yeah.
Knowing that like by the end of the summer, we're going to be in different places, literally. Like, should we stay together? And there's an epilogue where they are not dating anymore, but they're still like communicating. They talk all of the time and they clearly have feelings for each other, but they're just like kind of realistic. Like, we are not, we're 18 and we're not going to be able to be together, which was kind of refreshing. And that's a little bit Adam Silvera's thing, is like, not doing what you anticipate because it's how life really is. Mm-hmm. And who knows, because there's a sequel now, so I'm assuming they're back together. But it was refreshing to see a version of what can still be a happy ending.
Yeah.
Just not one that you anticipate.
Oh, for sure. I like it. It sounds like maybe it's a good book, but it just wasn't a good fit.
Exactly. And I think it was only not a good fit because I'm not 17, and that's not that that ever matters, but this specifically felt like big feelings for teenagers that mm-hmm. like I haven't experienced in a really long time. So it was like, you know, just talk about it, like just talk this out and you'll be fine. But that's a boring book. It's just people having great communication skills.
The Book of Good Communication Skills by Michael Hudson.
Oh, God. Can you imagine? No one would read it.
So my second book is where things went off the rails for me. It's The Soulmate Equation by Christina Lauren.
Oh my gosh. I've heard so much about this. I mean, I don't know what it's about at all, but I've heard a lot about it.
I liked it.
Yeah, Lily liked it.
So it's about a single mom, Jess, who's like, she's over dating, you know, the whole thing.
Yes.
She runs into this guy in the coffee shop. They have a terrible interaction. then she ends up tagging along with her best friend to submit a DNA sample to this new DNA-based dating app that matches people based on science. And, you know, of course, then it turns out that the company genetically, the founder is the guy she had the terrible run-in with at the coffee shop.
Of course, yes.
Yes, River Pena. And it turns out that not only did he develop this, but they are a match. And they're a match of, like, the highest category because they kind of – They'll rank you and say, you know, you have like 85% or 90%, and they are a platinum match.
Wow.
It's one of those hate to love situations, and it has so many of the stereotypes. It's got like a single mom, you know, making ends meet, a rich guy who's sworn off love, but he just can't help but fall for her. And of course, a giant misunderstanding. And yet, I really liked this book.
Oh, good.
The DNA thing was like a really fun lens.
This is like a thing by accident for you.
I know. Who knows? Apparently, this was the year. 2021 was the year of DNA books for Jill. I hadn't even put that together, but you are absolutely right. Oh my gosh. And I've just thought, sidebar for another episode.
Uh-huh.
Another episode that we're doing, the book I've read also involves DNA. Oh my gosh.
Wild.
That is wild.
You're single-handedly keeping...
The DNA book subgenre in business.
Yeah. Anyway.
I think the DNA thing was like a fun lens to put on the matching process. The characters had really interesting backgrounds. Both of them were kind of college-educated math nerds with the sense of humor. And Jess's best friend was just like an absolute hoot. They had great characters. Or they had great chemistry. I loved the secondary characters and their arcs. It was fresh and fun. That said... There was a lot of sex.
Yeah.
And a lot of details.
Yes.
And it caught caught me off guard.
I know, Jill. I know. I haven't even read this. I know your feeling. I felt it.
And I just, I don't know. Maybe I'm like romance readings version of like the 40-year-old version, a virgin. I don't know.
It's Can I just, give you my theory?
It's so specific. I just, what is your theory? I need help.
Well, it made me feel like, have I never read sex in a book before? Like, why am I having this visceral reaction to this? And I'll go into it later a little bit more. But
yeah.
I think it's because romance novel sex scenes are written a specific way. I have read sex scenes, and I just happen to have read them in sort of like a literary form, which is just less on the nose. Like, it's just a little bit more, not even talked around, but just like described in a different way that is less like mechanically, like, then this happened, and then this happened, and, yes! it made me have this reaction, and this and that. So it's like, I really was like, I was so shocked by it, because everyone would tell me, like, oh, it's spicy. It's like, well, I've read spicy books before, like,
right.
Whatever. And I was like, oh, no, got it. Like,
yes.
This is like medical almost. Like, I am being told everything.
Spicy is such a cute word. And I feel like, it's like when you're looking for a house and they call something quaint, you know, it's cozy. Right. That's a lie.
Like a celebrity does like an Architectural Digest tour of their home and they call their like, pool house, a cottage.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like, that's not a cottage. Like,
it's the same size as my regular house.
Yeah, literally.
Yes, that is how I feel about the term spicy.
That's such a good point.
I mean, we read books that are very specific about cooking and parenting and finance. I mean, I guess why not read a book about sex, you know, especially in the age of e-readers when like no one needs to know what you're reading.
Sure.
Which I think is like one of, we've talked about this. I feel like that's this huge, when 50 Shades of Grey came out, like I feel like.
I was just thinking that, Jill.
What really propelled that was that so many people were reading it on an e-reader and you could be reading and enjoying smut and no one would know about it.
But I think the difference there, to your point though, is that like 50 Shades of Grey was not hiding from it. Like it was smut. It was like very sex heavy. Whereas like, I love that you're saying spicy is a cute word, because it is, this is what's jarring about it, is like romance novels have like the most adorable covers. Yeah. They have like sweet little descriptions of what they're about. And like what's around the sex scenes are cute. And I don't want to say too much because it's a point in my next book, but it is just so discombobulating, those couple of pages of sex in the sex scenes with like what is surrounding it aesthetically.
Yes. And as you know, I do a lot of books on audio.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh yeah.
And this book, I had both the paper copy and I downloaded the audiobook, and I was, well, my intention had been to kind of work on it both ways. But I listen to the bulk of my audio when I'm like driving to pick the kids up. And I was sitting outside of cheer practice and I was listening to this book and they started coming out. And then I was like, the kids were. And so then I start looking for my phone because I need to pause the audio book. And like, I couldn't find my phone. And it was like this moment of like, absolute terror that the minivan door was going to open in like a middle of a very graphic description.
Yes.
Of an intimate moment. So for me.
Yeah.
Not on audio.
1,000%. Yeah.
I was just like, and we're done listening to this one. Bridge too far.
Ultimately, do you still like the book, right?
I really liked this book. And the hang up is me. It's not the book. There was nothing, as you've said, there was nothing. No one was taking advantage of anyone else. It was written for pleasure to be enjoyed. And all the hang ups about it were mine. I was taken aback and surprised.
Yep.
It made me a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
There we are.
Well, hold on to your hats.
I'm ready.
My next one was, okay. So the next one that I read was called Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert.
Oh, I've heard of this one.
Okay, so I need to be delicate here because I know this is a beloved book. Like, when I posted on my Instagram stories, I was reading this, is the most I've ever had people respond to it saying, like, I love that book.
Oh.
And I know people who listen to this love this book. So I don't want to invalidate people's feelings about this and make it seem like my experience with it was the correct one, because it wasn't. It just was how I responded to it. So all to say, I'm bearing the lead here. Like, I didn't love this, and I really wanted to. But Get a Life, Chloe Brown is about Chloe Brown, who has a near-death experience, like, right at the beginning of the book. And it leads to her realizing, I haven't really done anything in my life. And she's a young adult. I think she's in her early 30s or late 20s. And she's still living at home. And among other things, decides, I don't want to die with having done nothing in my life. So she makes a list it's called Get a Life list. And her hope is to start crossing things off. And some are like travel the world and go out drinking. And one of them is move out of your home. So she moves into an apartment complex where one of the, like, what are they called? Like, not maintenance man, but like a version of that. His name's Red, works.
Like the property manager?
I guess, yeah, he's like a property manager. And Red's an artist, and he also lives in the complex. And they hate each other instantly. And I can't really remember why, which is like my bad, but they do. They just hate each other. And for many reasons, they are brought back into each other's lives. But the main one is because she is on a walk and she sees a cat stuck in a tree and she goes to save it. Now, Chloe has chronic illness. She has fibromyalgia, and Red, like, notices her up there, and she is actually genuinely a little bit afraid of, like, getting back down and being in pain. And that's sort of where the shift changes, and they start, like, seeing each other more, and she brings him in on, like, this list she has for her life, and asks if he would help, like, will you go out drinking with me, take me camping, like, things that he is able to help her cross off. And in payment, she's gonna give him a free consultation for a website. She's like a website developer. She knows, sure, SEO, and he needs a new artist's website. So that's like the plan. Of course, they start falling in love and like not having sex, but you wouldn't know it from their reactions to the not having sex. Like, he like bites her jaw and she like sighs or moans, I should say.
Can we talk about the moaning for a moment?
Yeah. I mean, these people, these books are better at sex than anyone ever has been in the history of life.
Either I don't moan enough. I've never moaned this much in my life.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Like, lots of moaning.
Should I be moaning?
Yeah. Is that going to make it better?
I don't know, but I feel Jury's like I out. Should try.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. We'll report back.
To be decided.
Yeah. Lo and behold, they start falling for each other. They can't quite admit it for, you know, of course. And then there's a bunch of falling outs, and then they come back. I'm like really going through this because I really need to get to the point I want to make. Mm-hmm. You know how it goes. I read like 80% of this and then did the last 20% on audiobook. We talked about how romance novels can be really progressive. This one was. And Chloe Brown, the main character, is a plus-sized woman of color with an invisible chronic illness. And that is significant, and that's significant for a lot of readers. And a lot of her character is about how her chronic illness has kind of gotten her to where she is, in that people have sort of left her life. Like, she doesn't really have any friends, and she was engaged before and he left her as well. And it is an important aspect of like why it's hard for her to trust people. Redford is someone who, this is kind of a spoiler, it comes later in the book, but he was in a physically abusive relationship with a woman right before Chloe, and that physically and emotional abuse. And so that also, like, he reads into things and convinces himself that he's not worthy because of his experience before, which like totally normalizes like men having mental health concerns and issues, and men being victims of abuse, which we don't see enough of.
Yeah.
And I loved, what a stupid way to say that. I appreciated that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Now, a lot of my issues come from that, like, this is just not for me. I happen to think that, like, the main characters, particularly Chloe, was just, like, she was unkind. She was just not very nice to anybody that was in her life. And I think the point is that she is this way because of how people have disappointed her in the past because of her chronic illness. Like, she has trouble trusting people, so she puts up this wall. Okay, I get that. And people do that. But there's a point where, like, it just was also supposed to be part of her personality. Like, she was just, like, sarcastic and kind of mean. And it's just not my love language is not teasing people that I genuinely love to the point where, like, you're just being mean to them now. Like, that was a mean thing you said. And there's a point in the book too where they say that she just, like, it's painful for her to say thank you to people. And I think the point is because that then it would mean that she has to admit that she needs help from others, and she just really doesn't want to burden anyone else. And that, I get it, but I'm also, like, thanking people is about the other person. Like, it's just showing gratitude. And it just really frustrated me that, like, she was so unkind the whole time. And I was supposed to, like, believe that all of that is because of how other people treated her. Yeah. And
well, what I think I'm hearing is that the way the characters are drawn didn't resonate with you.
I guess there was a disconnect to what you're saying between how they were drawn and how they were behaving.
Yes. Because while characters and people are somewhat formed and informed by their past experience, a lot of times there's also, like, a redemption arc, mm-hmm. or they're on a journey of self-discovery. And for you, it just kind of wasn't hitting because it was lacking that element.
And to your point that you made at the very beginning was, like, something that is fun in romance is that friendships are really important. And the point of this was that Chloe didn't have friends because they abandoned her. And so it was naturally missing that element of friendship.
Yeah.
And that is part of the story, and I totally get it. But I was looking forward to that in romance, and it wasn't offered. And then, like, the situations never felt quite big enough for the reactions they got. Like, they had this huge fight at the end of the book, and it was so explosive and just didn't have to happen. And I was looking at Goodreads, and that was one of the reviews, was like, that last fight was, like, not really necessary. And I totally agreed, but I get that it also existed because there was no real, like, they would have just then been together and they needed, like, to come back together. But the sex in this book was surprising, and I was gasping left and right, and like, because, like, the first part was like, oh, Chloe, like, she wears polka dots and she's, like, loves to dress cute and just was, like, a cute little book, and then there are words on this page that I have never said out loud and, like, will never say out loud. And also, it was like, to your point, I was like, this is what straight people do, like, and it's this good? Like, it can't be this good.
Straight people, are you okay?
Yes.
So I
met with my friends Lily and Margie, and I was like, I am struggling with this because they were like, tell me. And I was like, well, like, she just said the C word like 8 times. And they're like, yeah, that's in it a lot. And I was like, that's just a thing. And then just like the verbalizing of sex in this book was just unreal. And what I learned about myself was that I don't think explicit sex is sexy. Like, I've learned that, like, for some people it is, like, knowing every single thing and how much they're liking it is sexy for obviously most people who read these. But, like, other books that I've read that are just less on the nose about it, I think are more effective. I was just, like, really struggling with, I mean, it's the most straight sex I've ever been accosted by. It was like
too much exposure.
Yes. Oh God. And just like discussions of parts, and this was like,
yeah,
people do. Anyway, I'm obviously a prude, so.
And such very detailed descriptions of people's anatomy. Yes.
And like everything being a turn on. That was also like,
yes, like,
they would say one thing and she'd be like, oh, then like he made my P word like like resonates. Like it was like everything had a sexual effect. And I was like, are these people okay? Are they okay?
Oh, do you remember that episode? It's one of the Thanksgiving episodes of Friends where they do the flashback and Monica and Rachel are talking and they want to trick Chandler into thinking that Monica wants to have sex with them. And Rachel's like, you just have to make everything look sexy. Like,
oh yes,
I'm so hot. And then when Chandler walks in, Monica has the knife and she's like trying to make yeah. like rubbing a knife. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Either I am incredibly repressed, which I mean, maybe, or other people are constantly aroused in a way that, like, I don't know how to respond.
But I think it's also like, okay, like, to bring this back down, like, because I definitely don't think I'm repressed. Like, not to like give you too much a window into my personal life. Like, we're good. Things are good. But I think, like, I had the mistake of believing that this was anything other than like fantasy. Like, like, of course it's like this because, like, people aren't reading for reality. They're reading for this right. escape. And so, like, I think I had the wrong expectation of what it meant to be spicy.
Yeah.
And because when I expressed this to my friends, they were like, this is very normal in romance novels. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, got it. Like,
gotcha.
So my point being, like, I didn't love this book. And that might be, that isn't because the book is bad. It's because it's not what I expected.
I 1,000% get that.
Oh, but I have to say, the audiobook part was divine. I really loved hearing the audio other than like hearing these words like said to me. Like I was literally like, I was finishing work or I was working while I was finishing it. And a sex scene was being discussed. And I literally, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this. Something was said. And I said out loud, I went, ew.
I love that so much.
So like,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'm going to cry. That's so funny. No, I totally get that because like, I have told you, like, I listen to my audiobooks a lot while I'm folding laundry. And so like, I'm just sitting there like folding towels yep. and it's like, I can't either. I'm just like, my goodness. And then like, Mark is working from home several days a week. And so like, I'll be in the laundry room folding towels and he'll come in and be like, what are you listening to? And I don't want to tell him.
Yeah. It's like, I'm being found out. Well, and it's like, it's just so jarring. I think because like the nature of romance novels are light and fluffy. And then, I'm going to go there. I'm going to say this and maybe we'll bleep it, but it, like nothing had really happened yet. And they were just like flirting or I knew that they like liked each other and yeah. Oh my God. Okay. A couple things. And then we have got to move on. But like Red had a wet dream about her and then immediately started masturbating. And I have never read these things ever. And I was like, oh my, should I leave? Like this is, I feel like I shouldn't be here. Like, and then, so I was like, wow, that was surprising. Okay. Then they were meeting about the website maybe. And she was saying like, he made her feel special, like, but not in her heart or something. In her pussy. And that was the word. And I gasped and Josh asked what was wrong. And I was like, she just said the P word. Like I had no indication that that's where this was going to go other than that's what romance novels do. And I didn't know that.
Several things. I feel bad now saying that my book was spicy because yours was spicier.
All to say, I understand why people love this. I really wanted to. I'm sorry that I didn't. It's not because I think the book is bad or that you have bad taste. It just wasn't for me. Now.
Yeah.
Do you have any others for me?
I have one more, and it's like, I realize that a 180-degree turn is moving completely in the opposite direction, and yet it does not feel like that is enough to describe the change of pace we're about to have.
Me too. Don't worry.
I read The People We Meet on Vacation by Emily Henry.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I felt like the last person on earth to read this book.
I have yet
but,
to read it.
If like me, you've been living under a rock, highly recommend. It's about Alex and Poppy, and they are polar opposites. And he's this straight-laced Midwesterner who's returned to their shared hometown after college to teach at the local high school. And Poppy is like the fly-by-the-seat-of-her-pants adventurer with this travel obsession and a New York-based career to match. They were best friends in college. Kind of accidentally became friends. They traveled together every summer until 2 years ago. And I feel like the phrase until 2 years ago should be like in a special voice every time you hear it.
That would have been a great title for it.
Right? So like you don't know for a very long time, you don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't read it by talking about that aspect. But basically, Poppy returns home to see if she can fix their friendship. And, you know, since this is a romance-themed episode, you know, they accidentally end up living happily ever after. Here's what I liked about this one. Yeah. It has this hometown tie-in. Emily Henry is from Cincinnati. It is set in Ohio.
Love to see it.
And the friendship between Poppy and Alex felt so genuine to me, as did their struggle. Like, they wanted different things. He wanted to be home. He wanted to start a family. And she wanted to wander. And their love for each other just couldn't change that fact. And it really resonated with me because, like, I don't know if I've ever told you this, like, my husband, Mark, like, they used to joke with him in college. Like, he would say when he grew up, he wanted to be a minivan dad. Like, he genuinely, like, wanted to live in the suburbs and have kids and drive a minivan. And that was not my vision for my life. And so I just really appreciated that dichotomy.
Yeah.
I mean, and this character just, it so much reminds me of Mark. I mean, just right down to like the cargo pants. And I love Mark so much. Mark wears cargo pants on the weekend. And they're like made out of some kind of like rapid dry material. And we call them daddy pants. Cause I mean, like, wow. No one else other than a dad would be wearing these pants. They have so many pockets. So you can just like put all the things in the pockets. He can carry all the things. Wow. And I love it because in so many parts of this book, Poppy is teasing him about these cargo pants. And like, that is a thing that happens in my relationship with Mark. And so it was totally just nice. He's like a good guy who everybody likes. They just kind of initially wanted different things.
Yeah.
And so I just saw a bit of my own, you know, maybe a love story in this one. And they give each other a hard time. They both speak fluent sarcasm. I just adored it. I want Emily Henry to be our friend and come and be on this
please,
podcast.
Please, Emily
Henry. Because maybe this book is about me.
Oh, and we'll get an answer.
Yeah.
I have only heard such good things about that novel and Beach Read.
Yeah. And I like
hers,
them
which
both.
I haven't read that one either. I don't know why. You have not really shared that with me before. You sort of have like in quietly, but not like overtly, like, this is what Mark wanted when he was younger, and this is not what I wanted when I was younger. But we've talked a little bit about that. I just didn't know that this had such an impact on you because it felt so real. And isn't that wild when that happens, how validating that can be?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have said in the past, you know, I think that compromise is an expression of love.
Same.
And I know sometimes that it can feel resentful, but it doesn't have to in some cases, you know, not applying that across the board. And I just really loved that there was space for them to both be the people that they were, and nobody had to suddenly completely change all their priorities.
Right.
Or wants in life for them to figure out a way to make it work.
Totally. And it's, I haven't read the book, but I also think like just life experience teaches you that like you can, there are things that you want in life and they might not match completely what somebody else wants. But if that someone else being in your life is more important than the things that you thought you didn't want, like my relationships with people I've learned as I get older is like what is more important to me than like what I considered successful in the career that I wanted. And like what, when I was a kid, I couldn't fathom compromising on. Why was I worried about that being such a big deal? Like,
yeah,
of course this matters more to me. And I totally agree with you. I think compromise is a love language and is better for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, so that aspect of this book just really resonated with me. And yeah. I liked that it wasn't so cut and dry, you know, like, I don't know. It wasn't like the Hallmark movie where the lawyer moves to the town and decides to be, you know, a Christmas tree farmer. Yeah. Like, oh, I discovered all along I really want to be a Christmas tree farmer.
Right. Yeah. That is an interesting distinction you're making. Like, you keep mentioning Hallmark Christmas movie because I do feel like the experience reading a romance novel is very different than watching a rom-com because
yeah.
A lot of stuff that gets in my way when I'm reading, like, and that annoys me is just easier to, like, get behind when you're just watching it. And I think it's because there's less up to me when I'm watching something, whereas when I'm reading it. So, like, when I'm reading a book, people's voices come to me a certain way, obviously. And if they are annoying me in my head, it's going to be harder for me to get past that. Whereas when I'm watching something, they're doing it for me. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So
I do.
When I watch You've Got Mail or Crazy Rich Asians, like aspects that are unbelievable feel more believable because they're performing it in a certain way. Whereas when I'm reading it, it's just harder for me to get behind all of the time. And it's just like another interesting thing about what is technically the same thing through a different art form you have a different experience with.
It's like that movie My Best Friend's Wedding.
Which I love.
I love that movie. But, you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this, what was that 90s movie? Obviously, Julia Roberts doesn't get the guy in the end. And yet you're like, man, that's the best romantic movie ever.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more, but it's not. It's one I've just started. Mm-hmm. And I really needed a palate cleanser. And I guess I'm going to talk about it because I just started it. And I guess I would consider this like a classic romance, but I don't know if historically that's what it was, if it's just that now. And I've just started reading for the very first time ever in my life, Sense and Sensibility. Isn't this such a gorgeous cover?
It's such a gorgeous cover.
Yeah. Oh, I'm obsessed with this movie. See, I love these. I was going to, Jill's showing me her covers now too. I went to buy a different version of Emma than I have because I a friend of mine got it for me. Nicole, I love you so much. I cannot believe you bought it for me. There aren't any page numbers on it. It's a weird copy. Like,
oh.
Yeah. So I just wanted another one that was, and also I was like, you know what? These have beautiful covers. I want to get one that's like similar to this one. And I don't want one that looks too modern. Like I want them to look like classic books and yours looks so gorgeous. Yes. Well, I love those.
This was
used.
This is used from college. I wish I had a way to know what year I bought it. But I love this book because when I took the class and read it the first time, I'm, as Michael knows, I write in my books.
Yeah.
But I love it because now when I go back, I can like literally know what my thoughts were.
Right. That's really cool. That's actually like a really good argument for making notes in books.
There are some places where there's like multiple kinds of ink because one time I read it and had one feeling and then I read it another time and something else entirely.
Well, and I love this movie and my mom is, I don't know anyone who loves Jane Austen as much as my mom. And I grew up with the Pride and Prejudice miniseries, like endlessly playing in the background and Sense and Sensibility. And I have visceral memories of my mom version of Sense and Sensibility. She bought the they published the script when the movie came out, and so it was like Emma Thompson's diary during the filming and the completed script because she wrote the script. And I remember my mom just poring over that, and I mean, watching your parent love something is going to have an effect on you. Like, it's really fun watching your parents indulge in the things that they love. So I never read it, though, and I loved the movie. And Josh and I just watched it. I mean, we're having a real Regency moment right now. We're like, we're just watching all things Regency, and we just rewatched Bridgerton.
You are the second person to say the phrase to me, "I'm having such a Regency moment."
Really?
Yes. My friend Amy was stopped by last week to drop some stuff off, and we got to talking, and she was telling me about how, like, she's just immersed herself in the Regency period.
Yes, literally. Like, I can't get enough of it. And yes. And that's my, like, general state of being. I love Regency, and, like, Maddie and Jamie, who are editing this, are, like, absolutely asleep right now because I hate period stuff. But stay with me, Maddie. I had never read it, and we just watched the movie last week, and I just forgot how amazing the movie is. And I then had it again on in the background while I was working the other day. And I just finished Chloe Brown, and I was like, I want something that's like kind of classic and obviously that I haven't read before, and like gonna not be so spicy because it's sure. Was written in a different time. And I forgot that I had this beautiful copy my mom bought me. And so I just started. I'm only like 50 pages in. But I'm already, and I want to talk about it more if we ever do like another adaptations episode, because I'm struck by how much the movie already got right and how much it changed already. And the different take on romance based off of the times that we were in, because mm-hmm. specifically Sense and Sensibility, because Marianne is such a romantic character. Like, she's desperate for a very specific type of romance, which is like perfect, of course, like right. Must have the same interests in mine, like loves reading and poetry and music. Must.
Like, yes.
It's so layered. Like, it's not just about, will these two people get together? It's like, this person died and didn't leave them any money. And so now they have to leave and they have to like live in a new place and meet new people. And there are just characters abound and a little bit of mystery, like, why can't they be together? And you were making me feel like you loved me. Why did you leave suddenly without saying a word? And it feels really complex and layered in a way that I think is why it has like a lasting impact, because it's more than just its description.
Yeah. I love the nuances.
Yes.
In those books. And how actions that are so small
mm-hmm.
take on deep meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I am very excited to talk to you about the book version of Lucy Steele.
Okay.
When you finish.
Okay.
Well, I think she is a really interesting character in literature. She is, you know, she's conniving and mm-hmm. she's scheming and unkind.
Yes.
She's also a person with really limited choices.
Yes. That is, again, what's so compelling about reading this is that it does feel like it's a little like glimpse into how things used to be for people. Yeah. It is also genuinely funny. And
yes.
There are something that I didn't say before about Chloe Brown was like something I don't love in fiction is when I'm in a book, when it's telling me like that was funny. Because, like, if a character says something and then the next character's, like, laughing their heads off and I'm just in there like, I didn't laugh. Like, yeah. What was so funny about that? I would rather something just be funny. Like, Less is one of the funniest books I've ever read because at no point was I told that was a joke.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And there was a lot of that in Chloe Brown where it was like, they're witty banter. And I was like, but none of that was funny. So like, I really can't not talk shit about Chloe Brown. It was fine. It just wasn't for me.
Well, I think one of my favorite examples of that in Sense and Sensibility is there's a scene with Mrs. Ferris, and I forget who the other character is, but two characters who are grandmothers mm-hmm. and and their daughters, and then their daughter's children. And it says, you know, like only one of the kids was there. And so to be polite, the one mother says, oh, your child has grown so much. I think they're maybe now taller than my child. And then she says, and of course, each grandmother able to actually speak up for their own side says, oh no, my grandchild is taller. The mothers have to be polite, so they each say the other's child is taller. And it's this whole description of this, like, you end up in these conversations out of politeness that are just absolutely bonkers. Yes. And the rules of decorum end up making you say, like, such ridiculous things. Like, of course, your relation to all these other people is going to impact whether or not you say someone is taller or shorter than the other person. Right.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. And there's a moment early on when it was described, like, I'm not going to get this verbatim, but it was like Mrs. Jennings had already married off her two daughters. So, like, so then naturally she just had to try and marry off everybody else's children in the rest of the world. Like, it was like such a dramatic response to it, and just said, like, very matter-of-factly, like, the dryness is just so British and so funny.
Yes.
And that's what I'm really loving it. And I know that it's going to be like a deep dive, and I'm just going to be reading Regency stuff, because I actually got the idea because I was telling you I needed another book to read, and you said, do the next Bridgerton. And I really, I'm loving watching the show and not comparing it to it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wait, I should just read Sense and Sensibility, though, yes. Because it's like genuinely Regency and one I've never read. So anyway, we've either lost all of our listeners, because I know a lot of people love romance, or they're laughing at us.
Or both.
They're definitely laughing at us.
Yes, for sure.
If you read romance and you're listening, like, because our reactions to it and interactions with it were like nuts, is us. And like, give us your recs. Like, give me one that based off of my reaction you think I could handle.
Yeah, I feel like I need to be eased into this because
yes,
wow.
Yeah, so I'm telling you, like, Regency is where I'm at. So, like, oh God, people are going to be like, have you ever like kissed anyone before? Like,
yes, I have never so strongly felt that an entire genre of books, like an inanimate object, was judging me.
Yes.
Yeah. Michael and I need help. So please send us some.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm all hot and bothered, but not for the reasons that these books should have made me. I'm just like embarrassed and sweaty. You can find all these books on our bookshop at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod. Head to our website at bookitpod.com for more bookish content, and email us at info@bookitpod.com for truly give us your recommendations. We are desperate.
Help us.
Until next time, Jill.
I'll see ya.
Bye. Love ya.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Birkett-Ragasey and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.